choose the right time. As the Klitsch states, there's a time and place for everything, and communicating is no different. You know, right time, right place, right discussion, right words, right environment, all these are interlinked. Avoid leaving discussions about heavy topics such as finances or weekly planning until late evening. Few people will be thrilled to be faced with sorting out major issues when they are at their most tired. Ideally, when you talk of issues related to finances or weekly planning, it is best it is discussed in the early part of the day so that you're aware that this aspect is looked into, we've come up with effective solutions, and it will be sorted. Instead, leave heavy topics for mornings and afternoon when people are more alert, available, and more likely to respond with clarity. Post lunch, it is said that it is best not to have meetings which are related to important issues. Of course, now we can't stop having meetings at all in the afternoon. But what we are trying to say that if possible, if it is done in the morning, it is better. So, something which is critical, mornings are preferred. Something which needs deep discussions can also be done during lunch hours. But when it's critical, that means something which requires urgent attention, then it is said it's best to be discussed in the morning. Though there are some people who like sorting out major issues when they're most tired, but that would be a smaller percentage of people. Because for most of the people, it is better when you're fresh, you're more alert to discuss major issues. Successful managers have observed that if they wish to discuss a matter which can evoke strong reactions, bringing them up during coffee or lunch breaks brings good results. Listeners being in casual environments are more cordial and less aggressive to ideas being presented to them. Many a times, a solution that has support of all the participants has been arrived at during such communications. That means, at times, a casual environment will work better. Now, why do you think that will happen? Because when there's a casual environment, the environment lets you think freely as compared to an environment where you know it's more work related, it's more to do with issues, it's more the boss's cabin. So ideally, your focus and your only stress is, oh, I need an immediate solution. Sometimes a casual environment helps you come up with a better solution. This will enable you to provide space to open dialogue with them about the communication and helps to ensure that the two-way process is occurring properly. If you are presenting to a group of people, be sure to check the acoustics. So for example, what is acoustics actually? The sound, right? So right now when lectures are being recorded, is the mic appropriate? Is it, you know, recorded in a manner whereby there's clarity through all the recording machinery which is kept around? So those aspects need to be looked into. Be sure to check the acoustics beforehand and practice projecting your voice clearly. Okay? Use a microphone if needed to ensure that your audience can hear you. You can request the participants to switch off their mobile phones or to keep them on silent, not vibration, as it will distract the particular listener. If the phone rings, laugh it off the first time, then request to turn it off immediately and continue talking. Mobile phones are ideally a great distraction. It is said that the police force was being given training and suddenly one of the people, the mobile rang. And it had ideally a song which was really funny. Now, what happens is that your mind is focused on training, the training which you're receiving. And at the same time, if somebody's mobile rings, the song is a very funny song. So it takes you off that mode, it takes you off track. So you need to understand that your ringtone and the song which you have, say it was a funny song in terms of a Hindi movie, whereby the song, the words were highly funny or hilarious. So then it can be a source of distraction. Especially in organizations, it's considered out of etiquette to let your cell ring. That too, it's on either vibrate or aloud. Then it creates an impression that you have not been alert and have not kept it on silent. Do not allow external distractions to act as crutches. The word is S there. Crutches that keep sidetracking your concentration. They will distract both you and your listener and effectively kill the communication. Distractions, they ideally will act as crutches. That means we need to understand if there are distractions, it will bring a hindrance as far as your work is concerned. Organize and clarify ideas in your mind. This should be done before you attempt to communicate these ideas. If you're feeling passionate about a topic, you may become garbled if you already haven't thought of some key points to stick to when communicating. You have a topic to discuss, but if you're not sure what exactly you want to express or put forward, then ideally you will not have key points to communicate. A good rule of thumb is to choose three main points and keep your communication focused on those. That way, if the topic wanders off course, you will be able to return to one or more of these three key points without feeling flustered. That means, out of the 3 points, even if you've forgotten one, the other two will keep you in a mode whereby you will be able to communicate effectively. And you will be able to move between point one, point two, point two, point one. So it's not keeping you off guard. You're actually able to communicate. Writing these key points down, if appropriate, can also help. Be clear. Make it clear what you're wishing to convey from the outset. For example, your purpose could be to inform others, obtain information, or initiate action. People need to know in advance what to expect from your communication. What is the core message I want to send to the audience? I may have a list of points, but what exactly is the core message? Core, C-O-R-E. Stay on topic. Once you start addressing your 3 main points, make sure everything you're saying adds to the conversation or debate. So there's no scope for digression. You're staying with the points. If you have already thought through these issues and the essence of the ideas that you wish to put across, it is likely that some pertinent phrases will stick in your mind. Do not be afraid to use these to underline your points. Even very confident and well-known speakers reuse the key lines again and again for major effect. Ideally, you can probably give live examples, you can share an anecdote, or you could probably show a video clip, various ways whereby you can convey effectively to the audience what you wish to. Make use of time. Every now and then take a breather. Look into the eyes of the listeners to understand whether the message is being received the way you wished. If not, use the technique of questioning. Thank your listeners. Thank the person or group for the time taken to listen and respond. No matter what the outcome of your communication, even if the response to your talk or discussion has been negative, it is good manners to end it politely and with respect for everyone's input and time. Well, sometimes a discussion may go offhand and it may turn out to be a debate which is not very healthy, or which has not been healthy in terms of a debate for the conversation to come to an effective conclusion. In this kind of a situation, we yet suggest that as a speaker, you need to thank the listeners for the time and for being there. Knowing the answer means that you think you already know what the speaker wants to say before she actually finishes saying it. You might then impatiently cut her off or try to complete the sentence. This is out of etiquette. This shows that you neither have the patience nor the manners. Even more disruptive is interrupting her by saying that you disagree with her, but without letting her finish saying what it is that you disagree with. That's a common problem when a discussion gets heated and which causes the discussion to degrade quickly. Now, when we talk of these barriers to effective listening, these barriers ideally can have ways and means or effective solutions to improve. It is up to you to ideally come up with effective ways and means to improve. By interrupting the speaker before letting her finish, you're essentially saying that you don't value what she's saying. Showing respect to the speaker is a crucial element of good listening. The knowing the answer barrier also causes the listener to prejudge what the speaker is saying, a kind of close-mindedness. When I say the knowing the answer, it causes the listener to prejudge what the speaker is saying. That means before she's actually saying anything, I know what to say. So it reflects on your close-mindedness. That means I know it all, this is it. You're rigid with thoughts. A good listener tries to keep an open, receptive mind. He looks for opportunities to stretch his mind when listening and to acquire new ideas or insights rather than reinforcing existing points of view. So, you ideally want new ideas. You know, something which is innovative is always appreciated rather than the same typical ideas. A simple strategy for overcoming the knowing the answer barrier is to wait for 3 seconds after the speaker finishes before beginning your reply. 3 seconds can seem a very long time during a heated discussion, and following this rule also means that you might have to listen for a long time before the other person finally stops speaking. That's usually a good thing, but it gives the speaker a chance to fully vent his or her feelings. What does it mean here? That ideally, when you talk of knowing the answer, wait for few seconds. Now why? After the speaker finishes. Once the speaker finishes, you are having a gap between the time the speaker finishes and your reply. Now, why is this required? There's a heated discussion. It also means that you have to listen and you've heard the person for a long time. Now the person has stopped talking. So the speaker ideally can fully vent out. Now, what is a barrier here when you talk of listening? If you are the speaker and the person across is listening, but if there's a debate, who ideally stops last? Who is wanting to speak further? Generally, if the speaker stops last, the listener has to put forward his views. If the speaker is quiet, it means the speaker wants to give a chance to the listener to speak. So a lot depends as to who is talking, what is the point of discussion, what can be yet put forward, all those aspects. Another strategy is to schedule a structured session during which only one person speaks while the other one listens. So unlike the previous where I just told you that who is the last person speaking, here it's one person speaking. You then switch roles in the next session. So today only you speak, next time only he speaks. It is worth emphasizing that the goal of good listening is simply to listen, nothing more, nothing less. During the session, when you play the role of a listener, you're only allowed to ask supportive questions or seek clarification of the speaker's point. Now, if you're a listener, you can ask for the doubts to be clarified. That's what can be done. You may not make any points of your own during the session. So only the doubts which need to be sorted or clarified. Knowing the answer. This can be tricky because some people's questions tend to be more like statements. Keeping the mind open during conversation requires discipline and practice. One strategy is to make a commitment to learn at least one unexpected, worthwhile thing during every conversation. We are students lifelong. That's what we need to know, no matter what designation you are having. If you have that mindset that you're learning lifelong, then you will understand that every time, even when there's a conversation, you will always learn something effective from the others. The decision to look for something new and interesting helps make your mind more open and receptive while listening. Using the strategy, most people will probably discover at least one gem, and often more than one, no matter whom the conversation is with. Another significant barrier to good listening is trying to be helpful. Although trying to be helpful may seem beneficial, it interferes with listening because the listener is thinking about how to solve what he perceives to be as a speaker's problem. Now, the listener is so focused as to what the speaker said, and he wants to solve that one issue, crisis or problem. Now, trying to be helpful may seem beneficial, but it'll interfere with your listening skills. So, he's so focused on thinking of an effective solution that what happens, he misses what the speaker is actually saying. An old Zen proverb says, when walking, walk. When eating, eat. We've discussed this today all along this chapter. Be there. That means in the present moment. In other words, give your whole attention to whatever you are doing. It's worth emphasizing that the goal of good listening is simply to listen, nothing more, nothing less. It means that ideally, you're only focused on listening as an activity. Trying to be helpful again. Interrupting the speaker in order to offer advice disrupts the flow of conversation and impairs the listener's ability to understand the speaker's experience. Many people have a messiah complex and try to fix or rescue other people as a way of feeling fulfilled. Messiah, that means you want to save others, or you want to, you know, do something so that the change according to you is required. Whether they need it or not, you don't know. Such people usually get a kick out of being problem solvers. They feel happy. They feel like a martyr. Oh, you know what? I've done this. Perhaps because it gives them a sense of importance. So who's a messiah? Someone who takes on to other people's problems and gives them solutions and feels proud of it. That, you know what, I did it. Why? Because then that person gets more attention. That person is made to feel, okay, you resolved it. However, that behavior can be a huge hurdle to good listening. Trying to be helpful while listening implies that you have made certain judgments about the speaker. When we talk of being helpful, how is it a barrier as we continue? It can raise emotional barriers to communication, as judgments can mean that the listener doesn't have complete understanding or respect for the speaker. In a sense, giving a person your undivided attention while listening is the purest act of respect you can offer. Because human beings are social animals, simply knowing that the other person has listened and understood is empowering. Often that's all a person needs in order to solve the problems on his or her own. That you be an active listener, give undivided attention and move ahead. Trying to be helpful. If you as a listener step in and heroically offer your solution, you're implying that you're more capable of seeing the solution than the speaker is. Now, this should not offend the speaker. A lot depends on who the speaker is. A lot depends on, is your solution as effective as you think? Does the speaker really, probably if he gets to know, approve of your solution? All these aspects have to be looked into. If the speaker is describing a difficult or long-term problem, you can offer a facile, off-the-cuff solution. You're probably forgetting that he or she may have already considered your instant solution long before. Now, when you talk of a solution, very often you as a listener may feel you're giving a very effective solution, but this solution may have already been thought over by the speaker. It is said every problem has a solution. If there is no solution, it means it's probably not a problem by itself. So, very often a solution may be there, but does it have to be implemented right away or can it be implemented later? Now, of course, it is simple logic that we say there's a problem, we implement the solution right away. But sometimes the solution may not be as appropriate as we expect it to be. So we mull over the matter, we think over it and make ways and means to come up with something effective. Strategy for overcoming this barrier again, trying to be helpful. Schedule a separate session for giving advice. Many people forget that it is rude to offer advice when the speaker is not asking for it. This applies even if the advice is good. In any case, a person can give better advice if he first listens carefully and understands the speaker's complete situation before trying to offer advice. Advice comes free, but doesn't mean we give it. We suggest advice should only be given if required and asked. Also, very often, the advice given to a person who is a subordinate by the top management may differ from individual to individual. When you talk of a person at top management, his level of experience, his expertise, his aptitude or her level of experience, aptitude, expertise, knowledge, skill, all this comes into picture when you talk of giving advice. So, if you believe you have valuable advice that the speaker is not likely to know, and then first politely ask if you may offer what you see as a possible solution. So, advice in form of a solution. It is best to know if somebody needs advice and only then we give it. Wait for the speaker to clearly invite you to go ahead before you offer your advice. Do not give advice at a drop of a hat. Only if you feel that the person is giving you the signal to go ahead with the advice which you have on mind, then you should give it. When we talk of especially a subordinate, his ability to give an advice may ideally be very different as compared to the advice given by a person at top management to his team. So a lot needs to be focused on as to who is giving advice to whom. Now, of course, a subordinate cannot give advice. A subordinate may share the same points in terms of ideas and have a discussion, whereas the same points can be put forward by a person at top management in form of advice. Some people feel that agreeing with the speaker during a heated discussion is a sign of weakness. They feel compelled to challenge every point the speaker makes, even if they inwardly agree. When you're having a discussion, most of the times, not always, the human mind may feel that if you agree with the speaker, you're considered to be the types who's more weak as an individual because you're giving in. Not necessary. Even in terms of a discussion, a heated discussion rather, no harm giving in or agreeing with what the speaker feels if the speaker is correct. It is best to have a neutral view and mindset when there is a heated discussion. Now, discussion then becomes a contest with the score being kept for who wins the most points by arguing. The moment I start thinking that, oh gosh, if I agree with him or her, it means that, you know what, I'm not standing up for what I'm saying. This becomes a barrier. I don't then listen to the person. I am so focused on what I want to say since a long time. I'm so focused that I will want to disagree with whatever is said by him. Treating discussion as competition is one of the most serious barriers to good listening. Because then whatever the person says, you will have your inhibitions and your barriers to what is put forward. You will feel whatever this person is saying, you will want to contest it. Whatever this person is saying, you will want to react, not respond. So it can be a challenge. It greatly inhibits the listener from stretching and seeing a different point of view. It can also be frustrating for the speaker. Although competitive debates serve many useful purposes and can be great fun, debating should be scheduled for a separate session of its own, where it will not interfere with good listening. When we talk of a debate should be healthy. When you talk of a debate, what is it? You have someone for and against. People who ideally have varied views on one topic, but in a healthy manner. It's not leading to arguments, fights. It's not leading to ineffective communication. It's not leading to a situation whereby the speaker is not really looking at the listener. And the speaker feels what he's saying is correct. So this makes the listener move away as such and not really agree to a single point. Now, of course, a debate means both are against each other. But it should be healthy. It should not have an outcome where you're ready to just see to it that what the opposite person is saying is incorrect. When you truly disagree with absolutely everything the speaker is saying, you should avoid dismissing her statements completely. That's what we are saying, that everything what the speaker says cannot be incorrect. Instead, affirm the points of agreement. Try to voice active agreements whenever you do agree. And be very specific about what you disagree with. A good overall listening principle is to be generous with the speaker. Offer affirmative feedback as often as you feel comfortable doing so. Affirmative is positive feedback. When will you ideally feel it's not a barrier to listening? When you are specific about what you disagree with. If 10 out of 10 points I disagree with you, then of course it's a barrier. It means I don't want to listen to what you're saying. I disagree with what you're saying. And I feel all what you're saying is incorrect. Now, you need to understand this is your own behavior. Why are you having this kind of behavior? Trying to influence or impress? Because good listening depends on listening skills as such, just for the sake of listening, any ulterior motive will diminish the effectiveness of the listener. When I'm listening to somebody, if I have an ulterior motive as, oh, you know what, he's saying this, but I'm going to see to it that in front of everybody, I say 2-3 things which definitely offend him. So ulterior motive. Now why? Say it's horizontal communication. That means communication between people of equal status. There's a production manager, finance manager, marketing manager, all of us are seated. I wish to get even with the production manager because probably we disagreed on something. So I have that ulterior motive that today when he speaks in front of all, I know he's my colleague, but I'm going to see to it that I put him down and I'm going to see to it that I make a mockery of what he's saying. So the ulterior motive. Examples of ulterior motive are either trying to impress, influence or even humiliate. You have this aspect that thought process that I want to impress him so that I get my promotion faster. I want to mold my words as per her or him every time so that I know I share a better rapport and I may get an appraisal. So that intention, okay? A person who has an agenda other than simply to understand what the speaker is thinking and feeling will not be able to pay complete attention while listening. Any ulterior motive, any other intention, anything else besides listening, which should be the intention, then it can take a different path. That means you ideally will not focus on listening. You will be doing everything else besides listening. For all you know, you'll be planning what to say. For all you know, you'll be planning how should I cut this person off. For all you know, you'll be planning next move. So a lot depends on you as an individual. Psychologists have pointed out that people can understand language about 2 or 3 times faster than they speak. This implies that the listener has a lot of extra mental bandwidth for thinking about other things while listening. And it is a fact. See, you're listening to us right now, you're listening to me right now. Your mind could be thinking of something else too. You could probably be thinking about your work tomorrow. You could probably be thinking about an exam which you have. So, what are we trying to say? That we have that ability and capacity to think of other things while listening. A good listener knows how to use that spare capacity to think about what the speaker is talking about. That means you ideally want to look into that aspect as to what the speaker is actually talking. You want to do introspection, probably you can say. You want to do self-analysis as to what has been told by the speaker. Self-analysis means only your thoughts. You could be seated in a group and have everyone share their views. But self-analysis, you also want to think over by yourself. A listener with an ulterior motive, such as to influence or impress the speaker, will probably use the spare capacity to think about the next move. Yes, I just told you sometime back what to say next in the conversation. Okay, his rebuttal, or that means he refuses for something, or what he will say next when the speaker has finished, instead of focusing on understanding the speaker. So either you want to go against, rebuke, or the next move. Trying to influence or impress is a difficult barrier to overcome because motives usually cannot just be willed away. If you listen to somebody with the intention of impressing them, then that, as the slide says, that thought process cannot go away immediately. It's so much on your mind to impress that person. It's so much on your mind to influence that person that even if you wish to change, it will take some time. Deciding not to have a motive usually only drives it beneath your awareness so that it becomes a hidden motive. Now, if you have a motive, it is generally, even if you're aware of it, it's a hidden motive, right? You will not literally say, you know what, I want to impress him or her so I get an appraisal. You will not share that. So, one strategy is to make note of your internal motives. I use the word introspection. I use the word, I would rather use the word out here, self-evaluation. Evaluate yourself. In fact, it is said it is very necessary to evaluate yourself on a day-to-day basis, probably for 5 to 10 minutes. You know, how was your day? Was I really rude to somebody? Did I actually have to, coax the people to prepone the project dates so that, you know, work gets done faster? Did I react or respond appropriately? So a lot to do with your own self-introspection. That means your own thoughts and what do you feel about yourself at different levels. That means how did you react as a subordinate today? How did you react as a person at top management? When I say a person at top management, your subordinate. If he's not completed work on time, how did you as top management behave? Then you had a meeting with your director. How was the conversation out there? Did you feel that, you know, you're constantly being blamed for something which is not done, though it's teamwork? So you introspect. As you notice your motives in progressively closer and finer detail, that means you actually, you know, figure out that, okay, I'm doing this for this. I'm behaving in this manner for this. I'm doing this specifically so that I get an appraisal. You will become more fully conscious of your motive and they may even unravel, allowing you to let go. Then you will start telling yourself, no, I'm not doing correct. Why am I behaving in a manipulating manner? Why should I impress or influence so that I get an appraisal? Should my work not speak? So then you will let go all those thoughts and behave in an appropriate manner.